Let me tell you of the days of high adventure.
Kevin.
What's up, guys? I'm John.
And this is 6 Degrees of Schwarzenegger, the podcast where we're taking a long, hard look at some of our favorite action movies from the era of Arnold.
Schwarzenegger is the icon of the genre, and we're taking a deep dive into some of these 80s and 90s cult action movies and breaking them all the way down.
That's right. We're going to get into the nitty-gritty and examine the good, the bad, the ugly, and the laughable in these movies.
But we're always coming at it from a place of love. You don't watch these movies as much as we have unless you have a genuine affection for them.
Dude, I gotta tell you, it's kind of late at night. I'm a little stoked, though.
We're wired up.
A
little bit wired up.
On beer and salsa.
Yeah, we've got salt coursing through our veins. That taste of lime, that hint of lime Tostito.
I'm particularly stoked because we're doing an Arnold flick.
It seems pretty appropriate.
Yes, it's time.
Yeah.
This is Total Recall, people. 1990, I think.
Yeah, I believe that's right.
Paul Verhoeven film. Paul Verhoeven's follow-up to RoboCop. Hell is yes.
Yes.
This and RoboCop before it make a nice little back-to-back like movies for Verhoeven. I think often about like directors that have had like just badass movies back-to-back, like action flicks.
Yeah.
It was McTiernan did Predator and Die Hard back-to-back.
That's okay.
James Cameron did The Terminator and Aliens back to back.
That's also pretty okay.
Yeah. This doesn't, I think, reach that level quite, but it's pretty fucking great.
Well, I think that for a lot of people, even when I told them we were going to be doing this show, a lot of people were like, I kind of remember that movie not being that great. I'm like, you need to go back and watch it because it is great.
It's also not that great, but it is great.
Well, yeah. And what I'm saying is they're not wrong, but they're also right.
There's so much to love about this movie, and there's just so much weird stuff happening.
It's kind of borderline campy in the same way that
like RoboCop
Starship Troopers and RoboCop can feel a little campy at times, but
that's still the Verhoeven magic.
Yeah, I love it.
It's like a mixture of like hardcore violence and humor.
That's right. And also, you know, you definitely get this futuristic atmosphere. We're on a different planet. We've achieved the impossible. We've gotten to Mars. And I think Verhoeven creates an effective atmosphere in that regard. So it's sort of like when you're watching Blade Runner, you definitely feel like it's in the future and it feels real. It feels tangible.
Well, speaking of Blade Runner, like a big nice thing that this movie has going for it is that the premise is based on a Philip K. Dick story.
We can remember it for you wholesale.
Philip K. Dick was like friggin' very prolific sci-fi writer, if you don't know. But he's almost like the Stephen King of sci-fi because it seems like everything he writes gets adapted.
I feel like I've spent a lot of time in the like more science fiction fantasy realm, like Game of Thrones, Lord of the Rings.
I've never read any Philip K. Dick.
Yeah, I think that I've maybe read a couple of short stories, but I've never devoted time to a novel. And I know we're going to get some hate mail because of this, and that's fine. Listen,
this is a movie podcast.
We are going to do better, you guys.
I'm going to learn to read.
After all these years.
I never learned how to read.
I never knew my fault.
But Philip K. Dick, his writings were the basis for Blade Runner.
That's right.
Minority Report.
Right.
Awesome. A Scanner Darkly. All the Adjustment Bureau.
So stupid. They're so trash. It's all trash.
The Man in the High Castle. It's pretty good.
I've watched all of these shows.
Yeah.
I've watched all these shows or movies. That animated Scanner Darkly is great.
Yeah. By the way. This dude had like just an amazing imagination.
Yeah.
What the future is. And so many of his premises.
Yeah.
Like have come to feel more real than
he is definitely to me the heir of like Isaac Asimov and Ray Bradbury as far as his science fiction writing is concerned.
Like absolutely.
He is so good at creating based on what I've seen in this movie. Again, we don't read creating an atmosphere. Blade Runner, incredible. Scanner Darkly, incredible. And this movie, incredible story. Even though this is not necessarily based verbatim on his story, the idea of it is there.
This movie also is part of Schwarzenegger like launching to being the biggest star in the world.
Right.
He had had, I guess just before this, he had done Predator, which had been huge. He had a couple of movies in the pipeline after that that weren't great, though we may talk about them. I think it was, he had Running Man come out after that. And then I think it was maybe Red Heat with Jim Belushi. Not a great one.
Not a great one.
But after this, he went on a run of, he had Twins, Total Recall, Kindergarten Cop, and Terminator 2.
And solidified himself as
that was
as
like the guy. He was doing comedy. He was doing action. Like, he was everything he touched turned to gold.
That's right.
On this stretch he was on. Touch. It's awesome. The story goes that Arnold was like a big RoboCop fan, and he wanted to work with Verhoeven so like badly that he sought him out in a restaurant or whatever and was like, hey, we should work together.
Did he do above his head?
He did not. He didn't need to, baby. Yeah, he sought out Verhoeven. He's like, I'm a big fan, loved RoboCop. We should work together. I got this project I'm developing, Total Recall. And I guess the rest is history. I think Verhoeven was amazing. A big Arnold fan. Arnold was one of the original choices to play
that's
the RoboCop.
What you said. I don't know that I read that, but I'm on board with that.
It would have been weird for him to be Terminator and RoboCop.
I think that, yeah, based on the other choices that he had of like Lundgren and Michael Ironside, who we'll get to discussing in a little while, those were better choices. As RoboCop's an iconic character, and I can't imagine RoboCop with a foreign accent.
That's a good call. Yeah, that wouldn't have worked for me.
I just can't. It would have been so distracting. Even though all he does is deliver one-liners once he's in the suit.
Yeah.
Still.
That's a great call.
Still out of trouble.
Yeah. What was the, what are some of the, Dead or Alive, you're coming with me.
Now, see, that sounds like Terminator. Everything would have said.
It would have been Terminator. It would have been a Terminator retread.
And how much would that have derailed?
It would have diminished Terminator, for one.
Well, and it would also, I think, sort of been like, can Arnold do anything?
They would have pigeonholed Arnold, typecast him.
So, Verhoeven, you were thinking straight, my friend.
So, it's great for Arnold that he was like seeking out ways to sort of expand his horizons, including comedy.
Yep.
But yeah, awesome stuff. The screenplay to this is really good. It was a Ronald Shusett screenplay written along with Dan O'Bannon. That duo was famous for having written Alien.
And that's good. You could have retired after that and been fine, I feel like.
Yeah. Alien was a masterpiece. I think they were developing this screenplay even back when they were working on Alien and still trying to. The story goes that there were dozens or scores of versions of the Total Recall screenplay.
And then, of course, a score by Jerry Goldsmith. The legend.
Alien was one of his
Alien,
right?
Was one of his. Star Trek, the motion picture. So we get a lot of great themes from him. I think
great sci-fi themes.
Yeah. I think that he was like only second to John Williams as far as being able to write a really memorable theme, especially around that time. But like, Planet of the Apes, Patton, Chinatown, which was an amazing score. Poltergeist, Gremlins, Hoosiers. I mean, the list goes.
Gremlins.
So, yeah.
Oh, I love that score. But yeah, I feel like they also said they wanted the opening theme to have a Conan the Barbarian feel, which it totally does. It
totally does.
To the point that I'm like, geez, you know, the guy who did the score for RoboCop did the score for Conan. Yeah, why not just use him?
Yeah, going back and listening to it now, it definitely has a little Conan vibe.
The heavy drums.
Yeah, heavy drums, brass sort of blaring at the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Oh, great. Another member of the writing team was Gary Goldman, who listeners of this podcast might remember also wrote Big Trouble in Little China or did Punch Up, like was one of the guys. So yeah, it's kind of got that madcap feel to it as well.
You know, but now that I'm sitting here thinking about the music, would this movie have benefited from like a Tangerine Dream or a score from like, you know, like in Blade Runner, what's the guy's name? I can't remember. The
Vangelis or something?
Vangelis.
Okay.
Yeah. Would that have
I don't been? Know. No, I love this.
It works.
It needs an epic action.
Like an adventure movie more.
Yeah. I think that was the O'Bannon and Shusett's idea was that it's like Raiders of the Lost Ark, but in space. But I think where they landed is pretty perfect. The tone of the movie.
I agree.
All right. So, yes, there actually is a movie to talk about here. And it opens up on Mars, on the surface of Mars, the red planet, very red.
It's very, very red.
I think these are all models, like the landscape. They look pretty awesome.
It's proof yet again to me that that's just the way things should be done. I know it's expensive. I know it's time consuming, but damn it, it looks amazing.
It looks like it's actually something that's been photographed, because it is.
Yes.
Anywho, it's we got Arnold, who we don't know who he is yet. He's right. Just Arnold at this point, and a woman in spacesuits.
They're roaming the desolate landscape of Mars in spacesuits.
And they like share a tender moment, like through their masks. And
he like weirdly caresses
her mask,
the side of her like glass,
her helmet or whatever.
Kind of like patting her.
Yeah, it's just
before they trudge along.
It's a little hard to be romantic in those suits, I feel.
It would have been funnier if they'd like bumped heads or something.
So then Arnold turns to walk, and the ground just sort of crumbles under him, and he falls down and cracks his mask open.
It's rough.
But, like, he kind of just fell for no reason. Like, this is our hero?
Yeah.
He's, like, clumsy. I mean, I guess in the end, we see he wakes up, and it was a nightmare.
Right.
So I guess that's pretty nightmarish. But at the same time, it's, like, it's not a smooth move. Right. Like,
and we also get our first glimpse of some pretty, like, rough facial animatronics.
Dude. When he's suffocating, it's like his eyes are bulging and all that. Yeah, it looks pretty painful, I'd say.
It has always looked like what I would imagine dying on a like out in space to look like.
Yeah, I can imagine. So I don't mind that mask work or that animatronic or whatever you want to call it work so much, because it's not meant to look like Arnold just sitting still. Yeah. It's bulging and swelling.
It's sort of grotesque and uncomfortable.
But then his wife consoles him, aware that he's been having these nightmares, played by the lovely Sharon Stone.
She's ravishing in this film.
This is her at her best, I'd say.
This is peak Sharon.
Yeah.
Peak Stone.
Peak Stone. Absolutely just mind-boggling how good she looks.
She's beautiful.
She gets mad because he keeps, I guess, having these dreams with this brunette woman.
Which at first she's concerned because this has been happening all the time. She calls him Doug, so we learn his name is Doug.
Yeah,
Doug. And she immediately knows, is it the dream about Mars? And he says, yes. And so she starts trying to kiss him. Is that making it better? And he's like, yes.
That's when she's like, was she there?
And then all of a sudden it's like the gears switch.
He's kind of like, I can't believe you're jealous of a dream. And it's sort of playful at first, but then she gets kind of angry and is like,
she calls her the brunette.
She's kind of sort of smacking at him until he kind of takes her and pins her down. Well,
yeah, she starts like actually sort of hitting him. I know it's like husband and wife, like, but like play punching. Like, I can't believe you're dreaming about this brunette. What are you doing?
Women be crazy. I'm kidding. I love women. Women make the world go round.
Men are both equally crazy.
That's true. Sharon Stone. Might be a little crazy.
This character is crazy.
I think her in life, there's like just stories of her being sort of a terror.
I can neither confirm nor deny, but I've never
met her. I'd like to.
Right. Yeah, I would too. I'd love to meet her. I'm sure she is a lot of fun. I'm sure she's a gas.
Performance is like so good though. In this movie, she is like perfectly cast.
Absolutely. And you immediately see that in this little boudoir scene that she and Arnold have got some chemistry.
Yeah, I was saying earlier, like, a lot of times Arnold doesn't necessarily have romantic chemistry with the women that he's paired up with. Like, I think of movies that we talked about, Predator, like, I feel like there was supposed to be some sort of chemistry between him and the gorilla woman that they pair up with, but there's just not.
Right.
Or like Commando, he's with Radon Chong and there's nothing there.
Right.
Eraser, he's with Vanessa Williams and it's just like not working. I mean, he's just a big hulking guy, and I don't know that
he's with a very
works
similar,
for everyone.
He's with a similar character to Melina in this movie in Running Man.
Yeah. Was the chemistry good in that one? I don't quite remember.
I don't know that they ever really had time. The chemistry
to develop the romance.
Yeah, but I think that it was as good as it is with Melina in this movie.
You know what? He was good with the in Conan the Barbarian.
Yeah.
The warrior woman in there, the Valkyrie.
And he was also good with Red Sonja.
Yeah, I had not seen the movie ever. Oh, maybe.
Yeah.
I just know it's legendarily bad.
It might be one that we need to do because that's got a heroine in it.
I might even have to axe out the fact that I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
from the podcast. I can't, I don't want the hatred. He had great chemistry with the Preston, Kelly Preston and Twins.
That is true.
Yeah, she had it going on as well.
Tonight's your night, bro.
Tonight's your night. It's your night, bro.
It's your night, bro. Tonight is your night, bro.
God, I love that movie. It's not an action movie. It still might deserve a little treatment on here.
It should, absolutely. There's enough action that it counts.
Arnold was getting some action.
Yeah, well, hey now. So is Danny.
Yeah. So it's the next morning over breakfast. Arnold's like locked in on the news from Mars.
He's whipping up what? Pancakes?
I don't know. I think it was some sort of future beverage. Yeah.
And I don't think he ever finishes it.
He's sipping on it. Yeah. Is he drinking pancake batter?
I hope so.
I would.
That seems like something Arnold would do.
Yeah. Right? High in protein, it's raw protein. Eggs. But yeah, Sharon Stone comes in. She doesn't like him watching all the Mars news.
Now,
oh, wait, her name is Lori.
Yeah. We found out her name is Lori. And then he is fixated on the news there. Mm-hmm. This is where we find out there are two rival factions, the Northern and Southern Bloc, at war. And there's talk of a conflict with Quado,
yep,
who's leading a terrorist movement on Mars to halt the production of, everyone ready, Turbinium, which is used to make weaponry
for, yeah, like Earth weapons. It's a staple of these Verhoeven movies to have like newsreels, you know, to deliver exposition.
And they do it a lot in this one. I mean, I guess they do it in all of them, because even in RoboCop, there's several moments.
Yeah.
But what a great way to get your exposition through and make it seem believable.
I mean, almost, let's be real, in movies in general, almost any time you see the news, they're watching the news, is because something, you're going to get some exposition from the news, right?
But the way that he does it, he sets it up.
So we hear about that, like there's a rebels or terrorists on Mars being led by some mysterious Quado. It's also, there's like straight up just a shootout happening like on the news, but it's like blood splatter everywhere. It's like crazy that like this is being broadcast now in this future,
which is hysterical, because like the very next thing is Quaid saying, you know, I'd really like to move to Mars.
It's nuts.
Don't you think it would be great?
It's weird. Yeah. It goes straight from bloody murder and chaos on Mars to Quaid's like, we should do it. We should move there.
She shoots down that idea right quick.
Yeah. And her reasons are fucking solid.
Yeah.
Like, aside from that, it's like,
you can't breathe on this.
I'm not sure I understand his reasons for wanting to go.
Right.
Other than the dreams, I guess.
Right.
It's like some Inception shit.
Exactly.
It is true. Like, I've experienced it in my life. Like, once you get an idea in your head, it can be hard to shake it until you,
for better or for worse,
You're like, once you get in your mind, you want to do a thing, then it's kind of like, it's just always that idea that you want to do. It's kind of always
time
there.
Strap dynamite to this thing and blow it up. she desperately starts to try to change the subject.
Yes. And like, not sneakily at all, Doug like sort of snags the remote and flips it back to the news, because I think she had like moved it to the weather channel or something, right?
She was starting to try to like kiss and stuff, and he's like, yeah.
So he flips it back on the news and is like, please, Sharon, I don't have time for the smoochy right now. I want to hear what's happening on Mars.
Yeah. And the news person says that alien artifacts have been found, and then we are introduced to a personal favorite of yours and mine. And if you haven't listened to our RoboCop series, go back and check that out, because we talk a lot about Mr. Ronnie Cox.
Ronnie Cox is fucking awesome. He's like undervalued character actor. He was Bogomil in the Beverly Hills Cops films. He was the main baddie in RoboCop and killed it. Dick. He's playing a very similar sort of corporate greed sleaze bad guy in this one as well.
Whose name even? Cohagen.
I guess we don't know he's bad yet. So spoiler alert.
He seems bad initially. He starts to try to spin immediately that this mysterious Quado and his band of mutants are dangerous. Yeah.
I think he literally says a bunch of lazy mutants think they own the planet.
Right. They're flying the ointment, apparently.
Yeah. So we're going to learn more about the mutants later, but basically his drive is that they've got to get this mineral Turbinium out of the planet, because it's useful for like the war effort back on Earth. They're making the Northern Bloc is making weapons with this. It's the only way they can help hope to defeat the Southern Bloc.
But Kevin, there's oil. We have to drill.
Yeah,
we have to drill. There's
we got
to
get that precious.
It's for war.
War fuel.
But even all of this, Quaid immediately, his head is in the clouds. He's like, I feel like I was meant for something more. I want to be somebody.
He really does. And it's kind of like, that's a universal, I think, movie theme.
That's a universal me theme.
Yeah.
Same, brother. We
it's just like, I like, feel like I was, I feel like I'm more special than the circumstance that I'm in.
It's like the Switchfoot song.
But I think that's something that every person can relate to. I think even if you're on top of the world, I think, you know, but I could have more, whatever it is that you want. Right.
Exactly. Exactly.
So that's a solid just motivation. Yeah. I think that's a universal.
I want to be somebody.
That's a, you know, and think about Bloodsport, same thing. I was meant to find the Kumite. I need this.
Right.
Yeah.
And then she responds hysterically. You are somebody. You're the man I love.
Which, hey, that'd be enough for me, I think.
And he's like, nah, no, I mean something good. Something, no, I mean something else, something worthwhile.
And yeah, it's so he shuts her down again. It's like brutal.
Poor Sharon.
Yeah. Now he leaves, and then Sharon Stone has like that look on her face that could be read multiple ways, depending on how you want to. Her performance in this is so good. Like, she walks that knife's edge.
It's a tightrope. Yeah.
Of like looking back on the film, any one of those early scenes could be read as she just legitimately is like, dude, why do you want to go to Mars? It sucks there.
Right.
Or she's got an agenda to try to keep him off Mars.
I think I remember the first time I saw this as an adult, not as a kid, because I think as a kid I was just like smitten with Sharon Stone. But as an adult, you're watching and thinking, that look could say so many things. And that's why the performance is, and so many people use this word, and I shouldn't say it, but I'm going to say it, layered. But it's like, she looks like just a frustrated wife. She's over it. Or she looks like somebody that potentially is like, maybe she's got something to hide. She's got something on the side because she's so tired of Doug that she's got something else going on.
This is a great part for an actor to play.
Yeah.
Because it's like you get to really like go into some, like you said, just it's a tightrope. Like,
it is.
Any misstep could be disaster. Like, you have to really nail every scene.
Yeah, and you have to be able to switch on a dime to something completely different than what you were doing a second ago.
So then we've got Quaid commuting through the futuristic transit system.
And the whole world looks like an airport in the future.
Yeah. This was we'll get to it. But he goes through like this high security like X-ray machine, which is very cool. That was some of the first use apparently in film of like CGI,
like genuine CG.
Like, I think they were trying to find a way to make it actually real.
Yeah. How else
or something. But yeah, in the end, whatever they were trying wasn't working. And they're like, well, we'll just sort of draw the skeletons and animate them.
Yeah, I guess.
But they used a computer to do it, but it looks awesome.
It looks great.
And it's like,
it looks legit.
In the moment, it's cool and it stands up and it's like setting up, you know, that'll. We'll have some fun with that later, right? Yeah, it's awesome. Freaking awesome. So Quaid steps onto the train, and there's a recall commercial conveniently on the television there.
Recall, recall, recall.
Yeah, Recall is a company that sells you memory implants in lieu of taking actual vacations.
Sounds legit.
It's an intriguing sales pitch.
It is. There is a wonderful book, and the author's name escapes me, but it's called The Art of Travel.
Yeah.
And the whole thing is based on the different reasons that people want to travel, and saying that, you know, some people genuinely want adventure, but then some people want to get away from it all. But there's so much that goes into travel that by the time people actually do it, they hate it. They hate doing it. It's a pain in the ass. And that's sort of what this would be like,
planning involved.
Exactly.
Like, like in reality, what is a vacation once it's over other than just the memories of the vacation?
Exactly.
So this is kind of like
cheaper. It's better.
Apparently safer. That's the sales pitch. And the thing that is interesting is like, you're guaranteed to have a good time.
Yeah.
Like, you could take a trip to, you could go to the Bahamas and it's rainy every day, but not like with Recall. It's going to be like, every day was perfect memories,
All right. So they're already talking about being able to use like VR headsets. How do you think about that? So instead of like, being in Paris, you'd put on a VR headset and it would essentially be the same thing.
I think I'd want to go to Paris, but like something more dangerous, like going to the top of Everest.
Yeah.
Or something like that'd be dope. I'd be into it.
That'd be cool.
So that's real life. That's like the direction. I mean, we could get, who knows?
If you want to go to India, you could put on a headset and you're at the Taj Mahal instead of dealing with the smog and the pollution or whatever.
I mean, I already like to go to like Google Street View and just look around in strange cities and stuff like that.
So yeah, it seems like Quaid, wherever he turns, can't get away from like recall.
Yeah,
like mania, like this, the thought. Oh,
and
of
they
Mars.
And in the commercial, they pitch a trip to Mars, and that's what really gets his attention.
Right, right.
And he's like sort of thinking about it. It's like stuck in his brain, like a broken record. Brain.
And then so we see him at work.
He's at work in like the whatever, the gravel pit, jackhammering away.
Because what else would Arnold do in a movie besides?
Dude, Arnold makes that jackhammer look good, though.
He already proved that he could do this in Running Man, carry rocks and chisel things.
So he's chatting up with his coworker, Harry.
Harry. Who is Robert Costanzo from everything you've ever seen but can't remember.
I think he's awesome. I mean, I remember him distinctly from City Slickers.
Right.
Like, given this, the student, the parents come to school and tell you what they do.
Yeah, he always plays sort of like a New York mobby kind of guy.
Yeah, he's just that guy. He was in, you definitely would remember him from Die Hard 2.
Right.
He was like the guy who was having McClane's car towed and turns up later, like Vito. Was the guy's name, of course, because why be subtle?
Yeah.
quite an Italian guy. And Quaid is asking him like, hey, you ever heard of recall? You know, what do you think of that? And the dude warns him against it.
Yeah. My friend tried a special off and nearly got lobotomized.
I mean, essentially you are paying them to give you brain damage.
Right.
Like even in the perfect scenario, they're going in and jacking your brain up.
Yeah, they are changing something inside of you forever.
But this dude, man, Harry, again, this actor, he gives a good performance that cuts both ways. Like, I think, Quaid goes on break or something, he walks off, and like Harry gives this look after him like, it could be that he's like, this dummy wants to go to recall, or he looks more menacing.
That face and the length of time that he looks at Quaid is just something is up. And here's where I pose. Would you do something like this? I know you'd put on a VR headset.
Go to recall?
Around, but would you do something like that? Would you have a memory?
I'm a pretty cautious dude. I think if it was legit dangerous, I'd probably not want to do it, not want to risk it, especially something that's messing with your mind.
Right.
Yeah,
I would not do something like this.
I think
that video games are already at such an immersive place that becomes a danger of people just getting sucked in and sort of staying in that place like in Ready Player One.
Yeah.
To an extent to where it's unhealthy.
Yes. Agreed. I think
that's not to say gaming's not cool, because it is.
It's all things in moderation.
All things in moderation, my friend. That's right.
Exactly.
Let that be the lesson.
So Quaid.
And no gloating before the fight is done.
Yes. Quaid being like the one track mind guy that he is, just straight from work heads to recall.
He's like, thanks for that advice, Harry. Bye.
Thanks for the advice. My wife doesn't want me to go. My coworker says it's a bad idea.
This
I'm going
to
go check it out.
Proof. I am I'm ready to rock.
The commercials are so compelling, though. Now he goes in, there's a receptionist there doing like a cool trick with her nails.
Oh, that is so cool.
She's like got a little wand or something that like can just change the color.
Every woman's dream.
Yeah, dude.
You save
just
a ton
mix
of
up
money.
The manicure every day.
Pay $200 for that thing, a one-time deal, and then you just have like little pads on your nails that are the right shape, and then you just touch them.
I think we could both agree that like the receptionist was just thirsty for Quaid.
Yeah, she wanted to climb up Arnold like a jungle gym. Like four wheels.
Now he goes back and he meets with the sales rep who.
Yes.
I think Quaid's like, I'm interested in a Mars trip. And he's like, well, space travel is your deal. Why don't you go on one of these other, I presume, like more expensive.
That's
trip.
Exactly what I thought, too.
Yeah. He's like, take a Saturn cruise.
Yeah, Doug's not interested.
He's Mars, like, no, I want to go to Mars. So the dude's like, all right, you get what you want. He pitches in the thing, which is basically a 2 weeks vacation's worth of memories.
Right. Anything else will be extra.
What was it? 899 credits?
899 credits.
Whatever credit's worth. Like, is. if that equates to a dollar, like
of what he calls first class memories.
I love that first class. These are going to be the classiest memories you ever had.
Believe me.
It's going to be all nothing but marble fountains and gold leaf
of Mars, I guess.
Yes. Whatever. But I think it's, you know, he says it's going to be as real as any memory you have in your head.
The Quaid is concerned about some brain damage.
Yeah, he asks about what about the guy who had to get a lobotomy, and the sales rep says, "Oh, it's that. Don't sweat it. That's totally safe now."
He says that a real vacation is the
pain. It's just as dangerous now.
Lost luggage, lousy weather. Forget it. Oh my God! It's like, what? Yeah, you're selling me on it, buddy.
On the commentary, Verhoeven speaks about recall, like compares it to the tobacco industry, where he says they're selling a dangerous product, but of course they're not telling you about the risks.
Right.
Which, you know, I can see that.
Absolutely. And then he sort of hands Quaid the questionnaire to start filling in. And
well, just, yeah, Quaid's like, I'm in.
Yeah, you sold me. I'm sold, man. Just $899, where do I sign? How many months' wages as a jackhammer operator is that? No one knows. And then the sales rep starts to get into the, hey, what's the same thing about every vacation? You are, buddy.
I love this part.
Yeah, this is we really start. He starts. This is the upcharge, the upsell.
Yes. He's basically pitching in a package where, yeah, you'd be have options of like who you'd be on this trip other than yourself.
Right. They call it the ego trip in this movie, where you get to choose your alternate identity. And he gives Doug four choices to choose from: millionaire, playboy, sports hero, industrial tycoon, and secret agent.
Yeah, I like the secret agent option myself. Well, what would you do?
I would probably choose secret agent also.
I like the get into some action, you know?
Yeah, just
like, I don't see how being a millionaire on your trip. I mean, I guess are you staying in a nicer hotel room or something? I don't
know. On Mars, what does that mean?
I don't know.
You don't get to go outside. You're inside the whole time.
Yeah.
You get to buy
being a sports athlete could be cool just because you'd have like babes hanging all over you, presumably, right? Yeah,
but
the secret agent's like, that sounds awesome. Like it's an adventure.
So, and then he describes the secret agent. You're a top operative. You're under deep cover on your most important mission. People are trying to kill you. You meet a beautiful exotic woman. And in the end, everything goes the right way and all for only 300 credits.
So what's wild is like, this is bold storytelling because they're essentially telling you what the plot of the movie is going to be.
Yeah. Laying it out there.
But I somehow, man, it works. But it's Arnold or Doug couldn't be more into this idea. Oh, yeah. He's like, yes.
And we discussed that the only way this scene could have been better is if Bill Paxton was playing the part of the sales rep. R.I.P. We miss you, Bill.
I love Bill Paxton, dude.
Yes.
I think in 1990 he would have been young for this.
Yeah.
But yeah, we agreed. Like, well, his character from True Lies, the car salesman, that Bill Paxton would have crushed this. Yeah,
this was born. He was born to play this.
He's also got great chemistry with Arnold. We know. So, right. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, absolutely. Great call by you, John.
Yeah, Doug is thrilled about all of this.
He's mm-hmm.
Psyched out of his mind.
He's just like, yeah, strap me in and put that sucker in. He's got this big goofy Arnold smile when they're like strapping him in the chair.
And he's met by Dr. Lull, who starts going over his file.
Yeah.
And you hear something on the news in the background or is it from
it's her? Not news. They're like just showing these slideshow of Mars.
Yeah. You hear something from her, I guess,
about alien culture or something.
Yeah, alien artifacts being found on Mars that are about 500,000 years old.
Yep. Yep.
Then you see them start to strap him down and she notices his wedding band.
Uh huh. Oh, he's like you're getting away for a little hanky panky.
He says he's been married for 8 years.
And he's like, no. I just really am interested in Mars.
And then that's when they sedate him and she starts saying, all right, I'm going to ask some questions and you need to be honest.
Yes. They have him like build his dream woman.
That's right. Are you what's your sexual orientation? What kind of women do you like? He chooses brunette, which is telling.
Yeah. Oh yeah. He's definitely trying to build the woman from the dream.
Right.
For sure. Amazing. As a guy who has studied screenwriting and all this, like the tightness that exists in this script is impressive.
Yeah.
Cause they point out that like, he's getting more and more drowsy as he's building the dream woman. And at the point that he's practically asleep, the picture of the finished woman pops up on the screen and it literally is the woman from his dream.
Right.
But he's so drowsy. Is it possible that he's just imagining not fully conscious?
Right. That's awesome.
It's super effective. It's very, very well done.
Yeah.
That's all I'll say. And this is where the craziness starts.
Oh, my God. Yeah. The sales rep's in a meeting with another client that seems to be going well. He seems like he's almost got it landed. But then you see that the techs are on the phone. Mm-hmm. They're on Skype.
Screaming.
They're on the Skype phone trying to get a hold of him. And he answers and they say that Quaid is having a fucking meltdown. Shit is going down in here.
And I never really liked that they don't show how the meltdown started.
Right.
That just felt like a little bit of a, like, oh, I would have wanted to see that. But
I don't know. I think, is there something cool about seeing those faces on the phone trying
to get his attention? With the on mute or whatever? Yeah. So the sales rep runs in there. He's helping them pin Arnold down. Yeah. There's a lot of yelling and screaming, a lot of good Arnold grunting.
And they sedate him, what, like five times?
They shoot him a dozen times probably with their little stun gun, the injection, whatever, before it finally sort of knocks him out. But yeah, he's screaming all sorts of stuff about his cover's blown, his name's not Quaid.
Right, that they're going to kill them all, somebody's going to kill them all.
Yeah.
And then the tech is like, I have no idea what's going on. He was going on and on about Mars. And she says that apparently, clearly, Quaid has
actually he's really been there.
He's got actual memories from
Mars. And the sales rep, like, I don't understand the hierarchy at Recall.
I don't know.
But he literally says to this woman who's presumably smarter than him and I would think is making more money than him. He's like, use your head, you dumb bitch. And I'm just like, okay, I feel like she's fucking smarter than you, bro. Yeah. Like, I don't feel like the sales rep is not her boss.
I think he's branch manager and she's just a techie or whatever.
Yeah. I don't know. But I just found that. I'm like, what's the structure here? Is he everyone's boss?
I think so, because he's barking orders at them and everyone's doing what he says.
It's like if at a car dealership, you wouldn't have the sales dude going and chewing out the head mechanic.
That's what I'm saying. I think he's the manager.
Okay.
I think he's everyone's boss.
And he just happens to be their sales guy,
I guess. It's like Michael Scott at the office.
He does it all, baby.
Yeah.
But yeah, she's saying, no, this is not part of the ego trip special or secret agent implant because we haven't implanted it yet.
Oh, shit.
And that's when he's like, okay. And she's like, yeah, we uncovered his real memories. Like someone's already wiped his memories. So they basically say, look,
we need to cover this shit.
Well,
up now.
You get the little her lackey is like, what are we talking about? They're like, this is the agency. And she puts a tremendous bitch slap on him.
It's amazing.
Yeah, she like lays him out with a slap. And then basically the dude in charge, I guess, the sales rep is like, look, erase his memory of coming here.
Wipe
and
his file.
Put him in a cab and send him home.
Refund his money. And
yeah, we're going to erase his.
We're going to act like
any trace he was ever here.
We're going to wait for this all to blow over. And that, friends.
Yeah.
Is how this episode
That's
ends.
A tight opening to a movie.
Whew. Yeah, a lot happens.
A lot happens right off the bat. This is a movie with a lot going on.
Oh, man. Yeah, the intricacies of this plot, they sort of unravel more and more and more.
Yeah.
It's more and more
the weirdness and the twist of the plot are only beginning. So please come back next time. Yeah, there's so much more Total Recall to discuss. So much more Arnold grunting and screaming and all that. Bloody violence. Oh, it's going to be freaking rad.
We can't wait to share it with you guys.
All right, guys, we'll be back.
We'll see you next time.